we provide those tools to the team kind of in Ghana, and they become the owners of what they collect. They get the money that is donated directly to them. It's theirs, it's not ours.
Welcome to the Pristine Ocean Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Hall. In the podcast, we talk to people and projects around the world tackling the scourge of marine plastic litter. You may have heard the term circular economy. It means feeding waste materials back into valuable products. But the demands of circularity create problems for the waste collectors. The waste collectors will need to document and track their work. They will want to make the claim, I collected this material at this place and at this time. But as in any business transaction, it comes down to trust. And the only way to gain trust is transparency. You need some kind of book or ledger where you can enter your claim. Other stakeholders should be able to look into this ledger. And importantly, nobody should be able to make changes like adding or removing a few zeros. In this episode, we are talking to the founder of Empower. Empower is a Norwegian company which has created the digital infrastructure to account for collected plastics and currency transactions anywhere in the world. It's all based on blockchain technology. You've probably heard about the blockchain, but if you still don't get it, you are not alone. Think of it as an Excel spreadsheet somewhere in the internet. You can add a row to this spreadsheet, but you can't change the data in the existing rows. This makes it great for recording transactions of different materials and currencies with different players all around the world. Empower has projects in over 30 countries of the world and has gained unique insights into how to solve the plastic crisis. Here's the interview with Wilhelm, the founder of Empower. Hi, Wilhelm. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Yeah, and thanks for having me here as well, and great to meet you.
I think I understand that Empower is wanting to connect the people who are collecting plastic with people prepared to pay for that. And Empower is creating the digital tools to make that all possible. But let's get back to your story. What were you doing before Empower?
Yeah, I'm a lawyer by education, but I, after law school, actually started an oil company, brought together a team of expats from Schlumberger working in oil service. And, the oil price was going up and we could raise money and start an oil company. And it was an exciting thing to do straight out of law school. And then I started a lot of different companies. So I have been, doing a lot of startups, for fun as well. And, had a mining company in West Africa. We bought this Premier League football club in Liberia, which we're running as a hobby and a football academy there. And in the end, a solar energy company, which is more the predecessor to what we're doing now. We went from oil to solar in 2015, 16, when you had the kind of last oil crash there, and the oil price went down from 110 to 40 in a few months, and they figured out, okay, if I'm going to do anything, there will always be risks, but at least if you're going to do anything, do something that you feel good about anyway, regardless of how it ends, you should have done something that you're proud of. And that's when I went into solar. I figured, okay, this is a green, it can change the world, let's do that. And we started looking at how we can do direct payments. If you charge your car, how can you pay someone for the solar on the roof, and create that kind of really direct business there as well. And got to learn about blockchain and thought that that was really interesting, as we mentioned, and not only then for solar, but even more as an infrastructure globally to really decentralize industries, make sure you can have a direct impact, that you're not really hostage of a big company or organization when you want to do something. And so before Empower, me and the CTO actually started a company which was going to, the whole mission was more to do decentralized banking, make sure you could take the money out of the bank and keep it on your own phone, you know, decide if you want to use the bank service or not, or pay those fees or not. And that was the starting point. And we thought that would have a huge impact, again, like the, against poverty in the world, because anyone could actually start an account just on their phone. You didn't need to have $100 to open it, or, you know, a passport, which is a problem if you're in West Africa or other places. So that was what we were doing up until we started Empower.
Okay. So you've moved from fairly environmentally destructive industries to solar and now plastic litter. Why this movement?
It was, you know, very opportunity driven when I went into oil and mining and those kind of things. It was just more an adventure, right? And, you know, not really thinking about the environment and that thing at all. It's just like getting a job and a business, and I could build something opportunistically and you know, doing that, learning how much it takes to build a company and, you know, the risk with it and everything. You figure out, you spend your whole life on it. And at the end, you know, it was more that than getting kids and everything. I think, okay, if I'm going to spend the rest of my life working like this and, you know, really, you know, it becomes your job and also your hobby when you do this kind of entrepreneurship. And, you know, if I'm going to do that, then I don't know any way the outcome, you know, you're going to get that money when you die and things like that. But at least you want to do something that you're proud of, regardless of how it ends. And that was more my kind of going into the environmental space, because I have these kids. If I'm going to retire in, you know, 30 years, I want to look back and say, I, you know, actually tried doing something, and I didn't just, and that's maybe some choices we've done as well, because should we just start an NGO, getting money, doing something, but helping people in a small, you know, place and, you know, look good and feel good in a way? Or should we really try to find out what kind of infrastructure does the world need to change? And that's kind of been what we then tried to do. Like, how can we actually make a real systemic change and contribute to that? And so when we, you know, look back, at least, okay, we made something that actually can work and make the world better. And that's kind of the, I think, the driving force that we have. And that's really motivating, right? Every day, at least you see that, yeah, this, you know, you might actually help on a scale that you can't do yourself, because we're, you know, building a solution and not, yeah, not just building your own business, or, you know, and it's a job, but it's actually a much larger purpose, right?
So you're not looking for incremental change, you're looking for a systemic change.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, trying to, you know, those small solutions that are out there that work in a small context, how can we manage to make them on a, you know, global scale and really make a different system?
So something happened when you met, as I understand it, Simon, your CTO?
Simon was by chance, actually. So we had some mutual friends, but I didn't know him, and you know, met him at this New Year's party, actually. And he was more interested in blockchain technology, and I didn't really know what he was doing then. But you know, he was just asking, okay, how can you use blockchain technology to do something about plastic waste? And we just found all these pieces, you know, coming together about, you know, where is the growth in plastic waste in all these emerging markets? How can you use blockchain then as an incentive to, you know, to give people a job and they to do that job of really, you know, closing the tap and putting a value on plastic? And then, of course, he was running his own NGO doing beach cleanups in the Nordics, and had the, you know, marine engineer, had tons of experience and knowledge about plastic and the whole problem, how the, you know, plastic bottle deposit system works in Norway, where you have a recycling rate of 98. So, you know, together we had that mix of international and local background about solution that works for plastic and technology. And it just felt immediately, you know, we stood there talking for some hours, and then we just had this idea of, we can actually, this is something we actually believe can work. And so that since then, of course, we've been running this this project. Yeah.
It seems to me that you have like two brains in this company. You know, you've sort of got this very high tech company, and you're working as like a in an NGO in the global south. How do you bridge that?
Yeah, I mean, we do, and it's definitely a challenge at times. And when we got the idea, we also had that discussion first, right? Okay, this is something we'll do anyway, but should we do it as an NGO or should we do it as a company? And, you know, we got advice from people who said, like, okay, do it as a startup, as a company, because you will, you know, it opens up for more funding and you can really, yeah, get heard on that faster. I'm not sure if that's right, like in the afterward, but that was kind of the choice we made. And it was also from my side, I think that if you really want to make that systemic change, it needs to be sustainable, right? It needs to be money that comes from it and jobs that can be created, and not just by donations, but you really need it to have a, you know, sustainable value for society.
But there's also a cultural gap. You're sitting in a rich country and your frontline workers are not in Norway, they're in Ghana, in Sri Lanka, in Africa. How do you bridge that culturally, geographically, all those other things that come up in that distance?
Yeah, that's, you know, I think the good thing there, I had been kind of working in this, you know, my career's only been companies in different regions, like from Southeast Asia to Middle East, you know, like Ukraine and Eastern Europe and Africa. And I've been working in these places and from a business perspective and seeing what the challenges are, how you know, need to include the locals want to succeed and not end up in, to pay your way out of problems, which is, you know, an issue if you do this the wrong way and you see these big Norwegian, you know, governmental companies ending up in a lot of hassles going into, you know, the third world because they don't really know that. And from the beginning, we saw that, okay, if we are going to, as you say, we're a small team in Norway and we don't want to fly out to do beach cleanups. And that's, you know, that's not the way of doing it. So we figured that what we can do is to create the digital tools, right? And something that can help anyone, but we won't take the ownership to anything. Like we provide those tools to the team kind of in Ghana and they become the owners of what they collect. They get the money that is donated directly to them. It's theirs, it's not ours. And, you know, what they collect is theirs. What we do is try to then give them, match them with people who want to buy their plastic. But they are the entrepreneurs, you know, so they will set up their organization, their collection point, run it. So it's, that's also where Empower come from, right? So we figure, okay, we can build a service for people, you know, a software tool that will have value, but, you know, we will never be the ones owning collection center and recycling plants around the world. That need to be the local ones that can create that locally, you know, knows how it works, can do this in the best possible way, that know how, you know, it needs to be adapted locally as well, because as you say, it's, you know, cultural differences from all these places.
You're paying somebody in a token in some kind of currency to pick up a plastic bottle or a piece of plastic and bring it to a collection point. What happens after that? That's when a lot of things go bad. Either it gets brought to a landfill, lands back in the river, or all these other things. Are you addressing that problem as well after the first 50 meters, if you like?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we have been doing, I think, the last couple of years. So the first year when we started, we just did this. Okay, we had the organizations around the world wanting to, you know, use our solution and, you know, get that token to issue. So we did these pilots in, I think, 14, 15 countries in the first year. But it was all like ad hoc beach cleanups, organizations doing a cleanup. And we asked them to document what happened with the plastic. But then, as you say, it's just the infrastructure is so different. Some places they deliver to municipality waste. Some, you know, one example was in Bali in Indonesia where they did the cleanup. And what happens is that there comes a guy, they pay, has a truck, picks up the waste and he drives away. And then he drives to the closest river and dumps it because he gets paid to take the waste away. And, you know, the shorter he can drive before he dumps it, the more money he makes. So that was kind of, okay, if we can do this cleanup, we can incentivize people to do the right thing, but there's something lacking and that's the infrastructure. So, you know, last 2 years, our focus kind of in Empower has really been to build that kind of tracking platform where you more or less digitize the whole ecosystem. So you know that something is collected to this collection point, then we know how much they have collected, they have a digital inventory. when they send it on to the next one, it's a digital inventory and then a verified, you know, recycler or something that they need. So then we can actually track this, and we have been building this so we can track it back into a product again, and ideally, you know, a circular loop as well. So that's kind of the final part, that is kind of that, you know, full vision and dream that everything that is used actually has a collection point or a spot where you should drop it off. Our main focus has actually been more than scaling up the collection and collection points. The last couple of years, we have been building that infrastructure to make sure we know that whatever is collected, we know where it ends up. Even if it's at the landfill, we can track it there, right? And if it is recycled, we can see, okay, this kind of plastic actually has a, you know, a value chain and can create a business for that local person or organization that's been collecting it. And so now we have spent 3-4 years on really building what we think is a pretty complete system for this. And yeah, within the next 3-5 months, we have kind of all the pieces again to really anyone, anywhere in the world could set up a collection point, be verified, start giving incentives, and we can track whatever they collect. And I think then we're getting another step closer to actually having some kind of solution.
You've say on your website that there's one of the major problems is that there is no marketplace, no functioning markets for this waste. Why is there? Why aren't the markets there?
Yeah, the problem as of today is, of course, that's, you know, we're lacking so much infrastructure to take care of all the waste we make. I mean, and especially in, you know, emerging markets, the number of recycling plants can't cover, you know, a percentage of the waste created. I think in Ghana they have 4% recycling of the old materials, and but they don't even have recycling plants to take care of more than that either. So things are shipped to Europe. And what you see now in EU, because of this taxes on very materials, there's already a lack of certain, you know, the easy to recycle materials. They need to now import. And and then there's this paradox, right? Because even the waste management system in Europe, which is supposed to be good, they still incinerate most of the waste, and it ends up as mixed waste. So there's some huge, really interesting changes that need to come, right, in improving the segregation at source. I think each, as you say, the most efficient here is local recycling, as local as possible. And then it's about the volume, if you need one of these plants in every town or every city or every region, just like any kind of infrastructure, right? How many places do you need a hospital or, you know, police department? Or the same will be with the recycling. It's just a matter of economy of scale and can this be most cost efficient? But I think right now a lot of this will have to be exported to Europe, but hopefully in the next 10 years, Europe will have to, you know, segregate their waste much better and reuse that, because the same plastic will create value in Nigeria instead and not being sent off to someone in Europe to offset their own, you know, bad recycling. And I think they say the same is starting in US, who has been, of course, shipping all the mixed waste to China, Malaysia. And now they're getting the same things, right? They're lacking some of the plastics that they need to recycle. And it's just huge infrastructure investments that are needed in every country. But hopefully we get to that place where, you know, it is handled locally, it's recycled locally, and you create the circular loops. But I think there's, you're talking about billions or trillions of dollars needed to be invested in recycling plants, you know, in this kind of factory. So hopefully we can, you know, be part of incentivizing that, by actually, you know, showing the data, showing where the waste is, you know, how can the government or other invest in setting up those facilities. And that's kind of how we hope to play our part in that.
You've gained an incredible amount of experience over the last couple of years in a completely new area. What do you know now that you didn't know before?
Maybe we have gotten is that really diverse view, because we have been working now in more than 30 countries, right? And we sit and talk to people and organizations, all these countries every day. So I think what we kind of has learned is what are the similarities between, you know, that cleanup in Norway and the waste problem in the municipality here and the one in Mumbai in that, you know, million city, about that, you know, small village in Laos, which is a jungle problem, in Nigeria again. And, you know, there's some very clear similarities in what the issues are, and regardless how the infrastructure or the culture or education, it's, you know, there are some things there. And And it's usually just about, you know, incentives and the convenience of solving it and who are responsible and the lack of that. And as long as you can fix those things, I think, you know, there's hope to do it. But if you're going to fix this in all these hundreds of countries where this is the world's biggest problem, you really need a lot of people to be involved, right, and help doing it and put the right structures in place. So I think that's maybe the what we learned is, you know, the scale of the problem, but still that this is actually something that can be structured away if we do it properly.
Great. What I'm going to take away from the conversation is that your Empower is building the tools to string these activities together from a collection through to a circularity to reusing the materials. Wilhelm, thank you for taking the time today. I and anybody who's listening to this story, I'm sure, wish you all the success with this great project.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me as well and letting us talk here. So yeah, appreciate what you're doing as well and talking about this. So that's great.
That was Wilhelm from Empower. Full disclosure, I am part of Empower's Plastic Positive program, where I contribute €5 a month and offset more than my plastic usage. Maybe you want to check it out on the Empower website, which is in the show notes. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to the Pristine Ocean Podcast, the podcast that speaks to people and projects about ideas to tackle the scourge of marine plastic litter.